Hello, and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part three of Halloween Party, the Fear Street book on Dune Reads Goosebumps. First off, thank you to Casey for paying for this sweet, sweet Steel Reserve brand malt liquor I'm drinking right now. And thank you to Lucas for being fully responsible for me recording this today, rather than, you know, terrorizing Los Santos like I was planning on doing. He donated on the old DuneReadsGoosebumps.com, and I woke up to that, and I was like, fuck, gotta record today. Sorry, so, Lucas, hit me up on the, Facebook.com/DuneReadsGoosebumps, or Twitter.com/Dune, or, I don't know, anywhere, and, or Dune at DuneReadsGoosebumps.com, and I will, and tell me what book you want me to do next from the, hopefully, the normal Goosebumps canon, and I will do that, because you paid me, and that's cool as fuck. I'm going to dive into this since I'm realizing that the drunker I am recording, the better it is. I'm about to take some tequila with my Steel Reserve, so let me take a shot. Then I'll dive into Chapter 13. Hornitos. Whoa! All right. Chapter number 13. We've got to get him, David said. Terry couldn't think why, but he was glad to have something to do. One of us will have to go down there, David said, pointing at one of the girls' vaginas. That would, joke would have been much better if I remembered any of their names, but I don't. But you don't either, so fuck it, let's go. He found a piece of rope on the floor and began unwinding it. I'll go, said Terry, without thinking. He climbed onto the slippery windowsill, then dropped onto the shingles of the dormer below. What's a dormer? No, seriously, what's a dormer? The wind stung his face, and the rain was blowing so hard, much like his uncle, so he could scarcely see. He slipped and nearly fell, but caught the edge of the roof and steadied himself. Hold on, Les, he said. I'm coming. David dropped the rope from the window. Terry caught the free end, and then began to inch toward where Les lay. Inching's normally a verb only reserved for caterpillars. The more you know. The knife still stuck out from his chest, like some strange sort of growth. And for the first time, Terry realized not only that Les was dead, but that someone had killed him. Murdered him. Someone at the party was a murderer. Doom murderous. Terry forced himself to put that thought out of his mind and concentrated on crossing the sloping shingles, one step at a time. He told himself, one day at a time, one fresh start over. Step back, whatever. Les's glasses had fallen off and his skin was no longer warm, but his eyes were still open, and Terry tried not to look at them as he tied the rope around Les, above where the knife was sticking out. Then he pulled and dragged the body till it was just under the window, and lifted while David pulled on the other end of the rope. I feel like that shot of tequila just hit me. And now I can read properly. Somehow, they got the body up over the boot windowsill into the room. Then, Terry boosted himself up through the window, like Zach wishes he was doing if he was playing GTA. God damn, I'm using my real name. Maybe I should keep drinking more so I, you know, have the normal flow. All right, I'll chug some malt liquor. We'll see how that goes. I just got off work and started doing this. And my girlfriend works later than me. So, she's gonna come home. Oh, we live together now, which is lovely. Oh, I love that girl. Anyway, and she's gonna come home, and I'm gonna be like, I was reading Goosebumps! I'm allowed to get... Shut up! And it's gonna be horrible. I don't talk to her like that, but the point is, I'm gonna be real drunk. For a moment, both boys just stared at their dead friend, both breathing hard. Finally, David shut the window. We've got to cover him up or something, he said. Terry nodded. They searched in the dusty attic till they found an old blanket. They straightened Les's body, then covered him. Now that they had finished, Terry realized they had to face the next big hurdle. What the fuck to do next? We better call the police, he said. David nodded. Wait, we better call Saul. Better Call Saul, new spin-off series. Shouldn't we tell everyone what happened? Terry thought for a moment. Not till we talk to the police, he said. After all, someone here is a murderer. We don't want him to get away. Let's talk to Philip at least, said David. It might be better if he makes the call. They went back to the living room as if nothing had happened. It seemed to Terry that hours had passed, but a glance at his watch told him it had only been a few minutes. The other guests were still playing Truth. A boring-ass game. Alex was standing on his head in the corner of the room. Terry guessed he was paying a penalty, but he didn't give a shit. All idea of fun and games was gone. For good. Hi, guys, Justine said cheerfully. Ready for Truth? Not just yet, said Terry. I think I need to ask your uncle something. Do you know where he is? He isn't here, said Justine, or in the kitchen? I haven't seen him, said Angela. Maybe he's disappeared, too, said Murphy, laughing. Like Nikki and Les, maybe there's a Bermuda Triangle somewhere right in the middle of the house. Nikki! After Terry had found Les's body, he'd forgotten all about her. Was she still missing? And there was a murderer in the house? Also, it wasn't a question. I just made it a question. Wasn't at the beginning. The sentence really went, she was still missing, and there was a murderer in the house. All he could think of was to run back upstairs and start searching for her again. But David clapped a hand on his shoulder. Come on, Terry, he said, sounding almost normal. Let's go see if Philip's in the kitchen. Right, Terry told himself. Call for help. That's definitely the first thing to do. He followed David into the kitchen. An open window was banging in the wind. Speaking of weird uses of verbs, I only use that verb for one thing. Am I right, Franklin, up top? All right, fine, fuck it. And next to it hung a wall phone, slick with rain. His fingers still trembling, Terry picked up the phone and started to punch in 911. But there was no dial tone. The line's dead, he whispered, wondering what else could go wrong. Maybe the wind knocked the line loose, said David. It's strong enough to blow open the window. Let me look, said Terry. He unlocked the back door and peered out. The line comes in just above the window, he said. Maybe it's cut, said David, looking at his circumcised penis. He stepped out onto the porch, pointing. There was no question. The line hung in two pieces, obviously cut through. The two boys exchanged glances. Were there feelings there? The chemistry was definitely there, but could Terry realize it? Terry wondered if he looked as scared as David did. Do you think the murderer did this? Terry asked. It was Bobby and Marty, David said. It had to be. Who else could it be? Terry thought it over. Could Marty and Bobby have killed Les? They could have sneaked back here and come in the window, said David, obviously wondering the same thing. No. Impossible, Terry thought. Impossible, Terry's Mexican uncle would have thought. The two bikers swaggered around a lot and pretended to be hard, but they weren't murderers. Someone is, said a voice in his head. Someone is a murderer. Someone you know. Someone at this party. Maybe it's Andrew W.K. He's secretly at every party. The only thing he knew for sure was that they had to get help as soon as possible, and that he couldn't leave the mansion until he found Nikki. We've got to find Philip, David said. Then one of us can go for help. The boys ran back to the house through the front hall. Terry glanced at a window panel beside the front door. Across the yard, Marty's wrecked motorcycle glinted in the lightning like a warning signal of doom. A particularly bright flash lit up the yard. And something caught Terry's eye. Quickly, he ran out to the motorcycle. David, close behind him, crumpled in the mud just beneath the front wheel, was a blue satin jacket. Philip's clown costume! Terry examined the jacket. One whole arm was stained in blood. I don't know, maybe he was just slamming dope and he took off his jacket because he got hot. We'll find out, won't we? Okay, consume more tequila and malt liquor. and hoping that'll get me on track, which I think that's a horrible lesson I'm sending to the kids, which is, you know what, if something's going wrong for you and you feel like it might just be a little bit off or just, you know, things aren't going your way, just drink until everything works out. It works. Chapter number 14. This is a joke, right? Murphy was saying. It's another trick. Sure it is, said Alex. Terry's still mad that the wimps lost the treasure hunt, and this is his mature way of showing it. Did he pay you off to go along with it, Dave? It's no joke, said David, shaking slightly in his wet clothes. He and Terry were standing in front of the fireplace, drying off. They were facing the remaining party guests. Tentative smiles and laughs had turned to expressions of horror as they began to realize that this Halloween trick might be for real. Trisha spoke now, trying to fight back the tears. Are you telling us that Les is dead? Murdered, said Terry grimly. But who? And Uncle Philip? Justine spoke up for the first time. Something has happened to him, too? We don't know for sure, said Terry, but we found his jacket covered with blood. Justine buried her face in her hands and began to cry. Alex, who had been sitting next to her, put one arm around her and patted her gently on the boob. Angela stood up, shaking. Someone in this house is a murderer, she said. Her voice sounded very high-pitched and almost hysterical. Or someone outside the house, said David, clearly being stupid as shit and narrowing the options down to, all right, we can be sure that it's someone inside the house or outside. Okay, that's 7 billion people. What a douche. He told the others about the cut phone line. I want to go home, Angela said. I have to get out of here, she said as if she was the Joker talking to the thief. She ran toward the front door, with Ricky and Murphy both after her. You can't go out, said Ricky. It's really pouring now. Besides, Murphy added, Marty and Bobby might still be out there. I don't give a shit, she shrieked. She slipped away from them and rushed through the door. An instant later, there was a cry from the front porch. Murphy and Ricky rushed outside. A moment later, Ricky came in, more frightened than ever. It's okay, he said. She fell down. She tripped on the piece of plywood Marty and Bobby put down as a ramp. Murphy came inside, carrying Angela. She was still crying, but no longer sounded hysterical. My ankle, she moaned. I think it's just sprain, said Murphy, clearly not a doctor, clearly just some douche in high school. What the fuck is he talking about? He set her down on one of the sofas. You'll have to carry me home, Murphy, Angela said. I don't think I can walk. I'll help, said Alex like a creep. Stop, Justine cried suddenly. Don't leave me alone. Please wait till morning. We can all go for help then. We've got to call the police, said David gently. But there's no reason for everyone to go. There's a payphone at the corner of Fear Street and the Old Mill Road. It should only take me a few minutes to drive there. Terry thought about the walk through the cemetery to get to the cars and wondered how David could face it, but he knew David was right. He had to go. In any case, Terry had to stay there to find Nikki. Don't worry, said David. You'll be safe here as long as you all stay together. Don't leave the living room and lock the front door. I'll be back with help in just a few minutes. He pulled on his varsity jacket like a cool motherfucker and slipped out the front door. For a moment, the only sound of the room was Angela's muffled sniffling as she was doing mad bits of Colombian rice, you know what I'm saying? Rice out. Angela brings the rice out. Then, Ricky got up and locked the front door. Everyone had crowded closer together in front of the fire, and even Justine seemed lost and frightened in the flickering light. It'll only be a few minutes, said Trisha soothingly to Angela. As long as we all stick... Terry, where the fuck are you going? I still don't know where Nikki is, he said, trying to sound calmer than he felt. I was looking for her when I found Les. This isn't just a trick, said Alex suspiciously. What do you think? Terry snapped. Do you see Nikki anywhere? She's been missing for over an hour. Maybe she's taking a dump. I wish I didn't say that. I'm sorry, man, said Alex, suddenly frightened. I'll help you look for her. For a moment, Terry wanted to tell Alex to mind his own goddamn business. But he read an expression of real concern on his former friend's face and realized for the first time how much Alex really cared for Nikki. Besides, he told himself, the most important thing wasn't who found her, but to find her as quickly as possible. And too much time had passed already. With a growing sense of urgency, Terry realized that it might already be too late. One of those sweet drinking pauses. If anyone's an English major or literate, what are those pauses where you put an extra line between the paragraphs? Tell me. I'm interested to know. As he walked towards the woods surrounding the cemetery, David realized he had never been so scared in his whole damn life. He had volunteered to go for help because he couldn't stand the thought of just waiting in the mansion with Les's body there. But he couldn't get Les out of his mind. Every time he closed his eyes, he saw Les's staring, sightless face. Why? I said those words right. Why did I stutter so hard? Every time the wind shook the leaves, trees, he saw the skeleton costume. Every time he was rocked like a hurricane, he listened to the scorpions. The rain was slanting down harder than ever, and he was soaked completely through his body and started to shiver from the cold and from the goddamn fear. It was taking him a lot longer to get to the cemetery than he remembered. The ground was deeply rutted and now so slippery with mud that he had to watch every single step. The wind had shifted and was blowing directly in his face, as if to force him back to the Cameron mansion. The only good thing was that there had been no sign of Bobby or Marty. Maybe the weather had gotten too bad for them. The wall surrounding the Fear Street Cemetery loom just ahead. He pushed open the gate and began to pick his way along the path between the grave markers, trying not to think about where he was. With every boom of thunder, lightning lit up the graveyard like a snapshot. Like Snapchat, he was sending his junk to ghosts. What? God, what am I doing with my life? The old gravestone standing out in eerie relief. It was only a few more yards to the end of the graveyard where the cars parked. In a flash of lightning, he finally saw them in the distance and felt a flood of relief for the first time in hours. In just a few more steps, he'd be out of there on his way to help. At last, he reached the gate, swung it open, and began to run toward the handful of cars parked at the end of Street. He reached into his pocket and took out the keys as he approached his red Corolla and stopped, holding them in his hand. The Corolla was sitting at an odd angle. Every one of its tires had been slashed. That was the guitar solo done by Slash. Every tire on every car belonging to the guests had been slashed. What the fuck is the guitar in Sweet Child of Mine? Because that was not it. Chapter 50! Bobby and Marty, David thought. He'd come all the way through the cemetery and now he wouldn't get any further. What could he do now? Somehow he had to get help, but it was a very long walk back to town. A flash of lightning illuminated the houses along the end of Fear Street, and David realized he could simply go to one of them and ask to use the phone because cell phones weren't commonplace yet, except if you were Zach Goddamn Morris. Never mind that half the houses were abandoned and the other ones were supposed to be haunted. Or that it was so late. This was an emergency. He had diarrhea. He stood looking at the nearest house a moment, then set out for the closest one and was stopped by the roar.
What do you think the roar was, kids? I'll have a drink. What do you think?
Of a motorcycle.
I hope it's Hagrid. And he's going to give him his Hogwarts letter, and then he's going to be taken away, and he'll be happy the rest of his life. My name is Dune, and I'm 27, and all I want is for Hagrid to take me away to Hogwarts.
Bobby and Marty, both on Bobby's motorcycle, so gay, came roaring out from behind the cemetery and stopped directly in his path. "Going somewhere, David," Bobby said. "The party's in the other direction," added Marty unnecessarily. "We thought maybe you'd help us get back in, especially when you'll see what'll happen if you don't," said Bobby. Both boys' words were slurred, like Dune's, and David realized they'd been drinking heavily, probably since they had crashed the party earlier. "Come on, David," said Marty nastily. "What do you say?" Suddenly, David had had enough. After everything that had happened, he wasn't going to let himself be pushed around by a couple of douchefag bullies. A nagging voice in the back of his mind reminded him that he had a Jewish mother, but aside from that, it also reminded him that Marty and Bobby might be murderers, but he dismissed that shit. They were too cowardly to do anything really terrible, he thought. Besides, he was too angry to think straight. "Get out of my way!" David said angrily and took another step toward the house across the street. Bobby revved his engine. "Hey, cool your jets, man," he said. "David seems to be forgetting his manners," Marty said. He had pulled the heavy chain out of his jacket and, holding it menacingly, stepped off the bike. "I ain't got time for this shit," David said, furious. "Something terrible has happened." "Something even more terrible is about to happen," said Marty, taking a step toward him. "To you." Ooh. For the first time since Marty and Bobby had showed up, David began to be afraid of them. He realized they had been drinking too much to know what they were doing. All right," David said, backing up. "David, you look good. You better back that thing up. You take it easy."
"Hey, what's the matter, man?" said Marty. "Don't feel so brave anymore?"
"Look," David said, searching desperately for a way to escape. "I don't have any problem with you guys, so why don't you just go away and leave me alone?"
"No can do,"
said Bobby, just behind Marty, talking just like Marty. Both bikers were so intent on violence that David realized that his only hope was to get away from them. He spun around, slipping on the wet ground, dashed back into the graveyard. Bobby and Marty were right behind him. They moved surprisingly quick, considering how drunk they were. David ran down a long path, a blur of tombstones flying by on either side. He was heading toward the wall, and then the fear street woods.
Ow!
He caught his foot on a root and went down in the mud. He was just pulling himself to his feet when Bobby and Marty caught up.
"Hey, dude, wait up,"
said Bobby, drunkenly. "You shouldn't run away. It could be dangerous." Marty cocked his arm and took a swing at David's head. David easily ducked, but he slipped away again and felt a sickening crack as his head hit the corner of a gravestone. He saw a flash of light, and then everything went dim, as if someone had pulled a curtain down over his heads. Or, like when you were playing that sweet Ninja Turtles game that wasn't the first Ninja Turtles game for Nintendo, because goddamn, that one was awful, but it might have been Turtles in Time, but that might have been for Sega or Nintendo 64. But anyway, every time he fell into a manhole, a speech bubble popped up and said, "Who turned out the lights?" Through the curtain, he could faintly hear Bobby and Marty's voices. They seemed like figures in a faraway place. Possibly Narnia. Let's find out.
"What do you do?" said Bobby's voice, sounding frightened.
"Nothing," said Marty. "He slipped and hit his head."
"He looks hurt bad," said Bobby. "What if he dies?"
"Then we don't want to be anywhere around here," said Marty. "Come on, let's move him out of sight."
David knew they were talking about him, but somehow the words didn't make sense. He was very sleepy. He felt himself being dragged along the ground. The light became dimmer and dimmer, and then faded out completely.
Chapter number 16.
Free Guap. Terry didn't really like the idea of Alex helping him find Nikki, but he realized it made sense. Too much time had already passed.
Sorry, I was making sure it was recording.
Please, he thought, please let her be okay. I've already checked the second floor, he told Alex. Why don't you check it again to see in case I missed something? Wait, said Justine. I'll go. I know the house better than anyone. I'll go with you, said Alex. No, Alex, she said sweetly. You wait in the living room with the others, in case anything happens. Alex was about to protest again. Occupy Justine's living room. But Justine leaned over and kissed him on the cheek. Please, let me do this. I feel so terrible about everything that's happened. At least, let me try to help Terry. Grumbling, Alex went back to join the others by the fireplace. Thanks, Justine, Terry said. Please, be careful. I promise, she said. Why don't you check down here while I go upstairs? Terry nodded. The only place he hadn't looked was the basement. He didn't really think Nikki would have gone down there to look alone, but he couldn't think of anywhere else to look. As he started down the dark, narrow steps. By the way, growing up in Southern California, basements are very rare. My ex-girlfriend, when I was like 18 or something like that, had a basement. But anyone else, I'd never seen them have it. So all I know about basements is pretty much pieced together from Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, which were pretty much the same movie. So point is, basements were spooky as shit. He could hear the others talking in the hushed, frightened tones back in the living room. Please, he kept thinking over and over, please, 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 let me get what I want. This was the first time he'd gone down to the basement. Each step creaked like something alive, and he wondered if the stairs were strong enough to hold him. The flashlight showed thick ropes of cobwebs and splintered, dusty beams. It was obvious that Justine and her uncle hadn't done any renovations on this part of the house. The basement itself was jammed full of old boxes and splintered boards. He jumped as something skittered across the floor behind him. It's just a mouse, he told himself. At least, I hope it's a mouse. It could be something else, you know? There are scorpions in my office at one point. I don't live somewhere with scorpions. That was horrifying. Nikki can't be down here, he thought. He wanted to call out her name, but knew she couldn't hear him, even if she was there. He heard another noise, a kind of thumping. From the far end of the low, dark space, in the circle of light, he saw a large storage closet set against the wall. Gingerly, he approached it and yanked to open the door, goddammit! Inside was what he first thought was a bundle of rags. And then, the bundle moved. It was Nikki. She stared up at him with a dazed expression. Terry? Funny face! I'm going to assume that in one of the last episodes I explained what funny face was. Maybe that's a, like, cute little term for each other. He held her tightly, overwhelmed with relief that she was alive. Finally, he let her go and shone the flashlight so she could see his face. Are you all right? He said. Where are we? Asked Nikki, looking around in confusion. In the basement of Justine's house, said Terry. In a closet. The basement? What? Said Nikki. How the fuck did I get... I don't know, said Terry. What happened to you? She said. I think someone knocked me out. Knocked you out? Terry felt his heart begin to race. He searched Nikki's face and saw that she had a large purple bruise on her forehead. I just heard a cat open... cabinet doors upstairs. What the fuck? Tell me what you remember, funny face. Nikki pulled herself to her feet and brushed the dust off her red gown. She squinted and remembering. Right after we had that silly argument, she said, I went back up to Justine's room. It was really dark and spooky, but I kept thinking there had to be something I'd miss. Something that would explain the strange way Justine's been acting. I went back in the secret closet, Nikki went on, and this time I noticed a shoebox on the floor. None of the other shoes were in boxes, so I opened it. It was full of mementos.
Mementos? It's like that shitty movie that everyone thought was good at first, but then you stop being a teenager and you're like, that was a pretty shitty movie. Like Boondock Saints, when you're like, man, that was cool as fuck!
And then you watch it when you're old and you realize it's silly. Old pictures, some pressed flowers, and this. She reached into her pocket and handed Terry a brittle news clipping from the Shady Side paper. Terry took the clipping and shone the flashlight on it. In growing confusion and disbelief, he began to read. Speaking of weird movies, it's very Inception. I'm about to read something of someone reading something in a book I'm reading on a reading. Read, read, read. Now I have to read this super professional. Local couple killed in fiery crash. Edmund D. Cameron, 26, and his wife, Sissy, 20, were killed late last night when their car was hit head-on by a car driven by James B. Whittle, 16. The Cameron's car, a late model Ford, was headed south on Old Mill Road when it was hit by the Whittle's car, a Chevrolet station wagon. According to the witnesses at the scene, Whittle had been drag racing with another car, a Corvette driven by John McCormick, 16. The Cameron car spun out of control and into a ditch, where it burst into flames. I didn't see anything till it was too late, Whittle said. They just showed up in the fog. I felt terrible about it. Whittle's car sustained major damage, while the Corvette was untouched. Neither Whittle nor McCormick nor any of their passengers was seriously injured. Those riding with Whittle included Evelyn Stales, 15, Joan Trimble, 15, Kevin Goswan, 486, Arlene Corrin, 16, Robert Carter, 14. The passengers in the Corvette were Jim Ryan, 18, Nancy Arlen, 16, Lucas Lady, not sure, and Ed Mariner, 15, all of Shadyside. The Cameron couples are survived by a daughter, Enid, age 1. No charges were filed pending police investigation. Terry quickly finished reading the article.
This must be the accident that killed the original owners of the mansion, he said. What a horrible way to die. Burning to death in a car? No shit, that sounds horrible.
Oh God, I need to call out of work tomorrow. I can't drive. Over it.
Yes, agreed Nikki. No wonder it made Justine crazy. What are you talking about? Said Terry.
Terry, the couple who were killed in that crash?
They were Justine's parents!
Terry just stared at her. Maybe we ought to get you to the doctor, he said. After all, someone hit you on the head.
Oh, for shit's sake, said Nikki in exasperation. Are you really so afraid to look at the truth? But Justine's parents? Justine! It doesn't make any sense, Terry protested. Besides, the clipping says their daughter was named Enid.
Remember, that's the name I saw on those prescriptions, said Nikki.
Besides, look at this. She reached into her pocket for something. It was a driver's license, showing Justine's picture and made out to Enid J. Cameron.
Terry looked at it, shocked. Well, he said finally, I guess Justine isn't a distant cousin after all.
But why would she want us to think she's someone else? You still don't understand, do you, dipshit? Said Nikki. Did you notice the names of the other people in the accident?
Quickly, Terry scanned the clipping again.
Whittle? He said. McCormick? Sure, that's some of the names of some of our friends. But so what? Shadyside's a small place. Terry. They're not just the same names as some of our friends. They're the names of our parents.
Didn't you see your father's name? Jim Ryan?
I don't know. I guess I skimmed it. I don't pay attention to the details. Can I get a blowjob?
admitted Terry, like every dude ever. But what about the other names? Joanne Trumbull? Arlene Corin? Arlene is my mom, said Nikki. Corin is her maiden name? Terry just stood for a moment, thinking about what Nikki had told him. He didn't want to think about what it might mean. There's another thing, Nikki went on. Did you see the date of the article? Yeah, it's, let me see, said Terry, doing some mental arithmetic. 28 years ago, and then he realized what that meant. So Justine is... Pause. Nearly 30 years old! Nikki finished for a long time. Terry, she's not a high school student. She's a grown-ass woman. A double life, said Terry. He let out a low whistle. I wonder what Justine would say if she knew you found out this stuff. Wait, can I go back to high school? Can I get paid to do that? Wait, I'm 27, so I'm younger than Justine here, but I've been drinking pretty heavily, and I got some bags in my eyes. I look like shit. I'm never going to be a high school student. Never mind. It would be sweet, though, to know what I know now. Then, where kids are all stupid, full of hormones and shit. I think she already knows, said Nikki. Or somebody does. After I put away the shoebox, I started back to tell you what I'd found. Only before I could close the secret door, someone must have snuck up on me. I remember bending down to pull the door shut, and the next thing I knew, I was in this closet. She touched her finger to the clitoris on her head. Oh, it's a bruise. I don't know how I misread that. Terry leaned down and gently kissed the bruise spot. Not her clitoris. Clitoris? Clitoris? Is there any common consensus on that? Thank heaven nothing worse happened to you, he murmured. Nikki looked carefully at his face. What do you mean worse? She said. Terry, is there something you're not telling me? Oh, Nikki, he said. He squeezed her hand hard. So much has been happening. Quickly, he told her about finding Les's body in Philip's bloodstained jacket. When he finished, Nikki was paler than ever. So, you can imagine, he said, how worried I was. I thought maybe you had been. I can't imagine why she let me go, Nikki said. She must not have had the time to do the same to me that she did to Les. She? Said Terry. You think Justine killed Les? Who else could it be? Said Nikki. Terry, look at the facts. First, there was this invitation list. Okay, he said, thinking. So Justine invited us, the children of the kids who were in the crash. That's right, asshole, said Nikki. And only us. Do you think it was strange she insisted no one else could even come to the party? Not even as a date? Yeah, I see what you mean, said Terry. I guess I'm still having a hard time believing it. That's why she's getting away with it, said Nikki, because no one would believe that sweet, innocent Justine could be a murderer. But Terry, we have to face it. Justine had us here to this party for one reason only. She paused, then went on, her voice suddenly shaking. For revenge. This is the 17th chapter. Nikki? Terry said. We've got to get back upstairs quick. David went to get help, so if Justine's planning anything else, she'll do it soon, before the police get here. Without another word, Terry and Nikki raced up the basement stairs and back into the living room. Everyone was sitting as Terry had left them, huddled close to the fireplace, looking scared and miserable. Everyone. But. Guess. Guess, asshole. Justine. She was sitting at the edge of one of the chairs, and a strange look of excitement on her face. When she saw Terry and Nikki, she smiled, her most open, friendly smile. Oh, good, she said, as if nothing had happened. You found Nikki. Now we can get on with the rest of the party. Get on with the party, Terry said, fliggity-iggity-flabbergasted.
How can you even think of such a thing? Justine, we know the truth. We know you murdered Les! For the next few seconds, no one could hear anything because everyone was talking at once. Have you guys been drinking? Murphy demanded.
Is he talking to me?
I know what this is, said Alex. It's the last try of the wimps to scare the rest of us away, but it won't work, Terry. Forget that shit. Listen to me, Nikki shouted. I have a newspaper clipping. It proves... But before she could reach for the clipping, Justine suddenly started laughing and clapping her hands. Everyone turned and stared at her. Perfect, she said. Nikki, Terry, you are both perfect. You're even better than when we rehearsed it. Even if I weren't in on it, I'd believe you thought I was a murderer. You mean, gasped Trisha, that this is just another... It's another surprise, said Justine. The next last one of the evening. And I'm sorry if it frightened some of you, but what's Halloween without a good scare? She's lying, Nikki shouted. Don't listen to her. This isn't a trick, Terry added. Trisha, Alex, all of you, listen to us. Think about what's happened. What about Les? Trisha suddenly asked, surprised. What about him? Said Justine. He was in on it, too. Come off it, Justine, Terry said. Les is dead. He's less than living. I saw his body, and you killed him. Justine laughed again, as if this were the best joke she had ever heard. You can stop now, Terry, she said. I think everyone has gotten the point. You're denying you killed him, said Terry. If I killed Les, Justine said, wiping tears of laughter from her face, how come he and I were just having a good laugh upstairs? But... said Terry. Justine, said Nikki at the same time. I saw your... Justine cut both of them off. Come on, guys, lighten up. Forget about lesson. Let's move on to the last surprise of the night. Oh, my goodness. All right. Switch to drinking Bud Light Platinum. I'm going platinum. The Kid Rock reference is ironic. But unfortunately, the ICB references are not.
Chapter 18.
I can't believe you did this, Murphy grumbled. Even worse, I can't believe we fell for it. Does this mean that the wimp team wins? Asked Ricky. No way, said Alex. Besides, you had help from Justine. Like all the others, he was obviously relieved. Terry couldn't believe his friends could be so blind. Come on, Ricky! This is for real! He cried. He glanced at Nikki, who was shaking with rage and frustration. This is nuts! They all believe Justine! She whispered. We've got to convince them! We're all in terrible danger! I don't think we can, Terry said. But you and I know the truth. Why don't we get out of here while there's still time? Nikki shook her head. We can't do that, Terry, she said. We can't leave them alone with her. Not when they trust her. We'll just have to hope that David gets here soon to help. Terry knew she was right. Justine, said Nikki sweetly, if this is all just a trick, then where's your Uncle Philip? Don't you remember? Justine said, sounding exasperated. He went out to get more face... What? I was going for sodas. That's the word. And I just said phase. Alright, alcohol. Fix my brain. I'm giving you one more chance, Bud Light Platinum, and your sweet cobalt blue bottle. That was the dumbest answer Terry could imagine, but the others didn't seem to notice. Terry decided to try another tack. You told us you and Les were just talking, he said, but nobody has seen him. If this is all a trick, where is he? I thought you'd never ask, said Justine, hopping up from where she was sitting. Les is in the dining room, helping me prepare the final surprise. Ooh, I hope it's lasagna. I'm hungry.
Everyone started to move toward the dining room, but Justine raised her hand. "Wait just a minute," she said. "I want to make sure everything is perfect." She turned and went to the dining room, leaving the door slightly open. Some would say ajar. When is a door not a door? When it's ajar. That's the only riddle I know. I would be terrible if I went up against Bilbo Baggins. "Our trick worked perfectly, Les," everyone heard her say. "Thanks for all your help." From the other side of the door, Terry and the others heard Justine continue to chat with Les. Terry felt the hair on the back of his neck prickle. Then Justine reappeared at the door. "Come on, everybody. Get down tonight," she said. "Everything's ready for you now." Everyone hurried to the dining room, with Ricky and Murphy supporting Angela as she hopped on one foot. In the center of the room was a long, polished table with a big candelabra in the middle. Around the table were small gift wrap boxes at each place, and at the head of the table sat Les. He was wearing big, oval-shaped sunglasses that reflected the candle's glow. "Find your places," Justine said. "Each box has a name on it." But no one paid any attention to the gift boxes. Instead, they all crowded around Les. Murphy's balled up fists and half jokingly held it at Les's face. "Hey man, you scared us silly," he said. "We were actually worried about you." "Yeah," Alex agreed. "I never thought I'd be able to see you." Or glad to see you, whatever. Les didn't answer. "It was a good trick, Les," said Trisha, "but it wasn't fair to pull it on your own team. Why didn't you say something?" Les didn't answer. Terry looked at him more closely. Something wasn't right. Les wasn't moving. Not at all. Terry touched his friend on the shoulder, and Les slowly toppled off the chair onto the floor. The dark glasses flew off, revealing his staring and very dead eyes. God damn, this is heavier than Goosebumps books. "He's dead," Terry said, feeling cold all over. "I knew it." Someone screamed. "I think I'm going to be sick," Trisha said. Terry turned quickly just in time to see Justine dart outside, slamming the door behind her. An instant later, a key turned. Terry knew without looking. They were locked in. No shit, Terry knew without looking they were locked in. She turned a key. What the fuck? Obviously you don't have to look at that. You could hear the sound itself. It was a key turning. You're a fucking idiot. Checking if I have any text messages from my girlfriend. 19. Platinum. The only window was covered with a heavy metal security grate, and there was only one door. Murphy immediately began pounding on it, but it was solid oak. Just like Professor Oak, friend of Ash. "Let us out!" he shouted. Alex and Ricky pulled and pried at the security grate, but it wouldn't budge. "We're trapped," Angela yelled shrilly. "She's trapped us in here with a dead..." "Calm down, Angela," said Nikki, taking her gently by the shoulders. "Yes," agreed Trisha, her own voice shaking. "We've got to keep calm. We've got to think clearly. Am I the only one in the world," which I know I can't be, "but anytime I see anything that's keep calm, and blah, 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 I just want to strangle everyone. That's the most fucked out shit in the world. I don't understand why people keep doing it. It's fucking irritating. It's been done ad nauseum. Keep calm and kill zombies. Like, fuck those people. Fuck anyone who likes that. Keep calm and chive on. Fuck everyone. Fuck. If you know anyone that thinks that's a good idea, just fucking hit them. And hit them and hit them till they're fucking dead as less." At that moment, Justine's bell rang from outside the window. "Surprise!" she called into them, her face close to the security grate. She was shining a powerful flashlight on her face. They hurried to the window. It had stopped raining, they saw. "Now, wasn't this the best Halloween trick of all?" Justine said, obviously pleased with herself. "Let us out of here, Justine," said Terry. "I don't know what you have in mind, but David will be back any minute with police." Then I'd better hurry, hadn't I? She said calmly. She smiled at all of her guests, a cruel, mocking smile. It's time for the last surprise of the evening, she said. But first, I want all of you to sit at your places at the table and open the gift boxes. You've lied to us from the beginning, said Alex. Why should we do anything you say? Because, Justine said coldly. I know there's a part after this, but it'd be funny if R.L. Stine's writing was so lazy. It was just like, because. Alright, story checks out. I will be very angry if you spoil my surprise, and who knows what I might do then. Now, find your places. One by one, the guests drifted to the table and sat down. For a minute or so, the only sound was of chairs scraping along the floor, punctuated by sniffing from Angela. Is everybody ready? Said Justine. Good. Now we will finish playing truth. Only this time it's my turn to tell the truth, and for you to pay the penalty. She smiled, her crazed smile, and Terry again felt cold. Maybe she just wanted to talk, he hoped. He heard that some insane people simply needed a chance to talk about the things that were bothering them. Besides, she was outside the house. What could she possibly do to them from out there? Wow. The guy on Home Improvement did a fuck of a lot, and he fucking killed that family and he cornholed Jonathan Taylor Thomas all without showing his face from across a fence. Before I begin, Justine went on, I'd like you to unwrap your packages. She waited while the guests untied the boxes. Inside each one was an identical photograph of a young, smiling couple dressed in clothes of the 60s. The woman had dark hair, but she looked hauntingly like Justine.
Hi, Yodi.
Part of my girlfriend moving in was the cat moving in. And while I have a ghetto-ass fucking angry screaming cat that was found on the streets, she has a purebred sphinx cat that costs a lot of money. And he's the biggest sweetheart in the world. He's weighs, I think, slightly more than my dog. But he's the greatest thing in the world. But anyway, right now, him and my cat are... They're not fighting, they're just playing. She's sitting on a chair and he's sitting on a table above the chair. And they're just smacking each other's paws and they're very cute.
The pictures are of a couple named Edmund and Sissy, Justine told him. Now, I want you to look at the pictures while I tell you a story. She glanced around the room to make sure everyone was looking at a copy of the picture. Edmund and Sissy, Justine began, were just like you, young, full of happiness and hope for the future.
Obama voters, am I right?
They were full of hope, that is, until 28 years ago tonight, she paused, then went on in a sing-song way, as if she had memorized a script. 28 years ago it was Halloween, just like tonight, all right!
Added the right so it sounded more like a song.
Edmund and Sissy had been visiting friends. They were on their way home to their one-year-old daughter, who they loved very much. All right. There was a car going south on Old Mill Road.
Again, she paused. Even though he knew what was coming, Terry couldn't help listening, fascinated as the story unfolded.
At the same time, Justine continued, there were two cars full of teenagers driving north on Old Mill Road. They had just been to a Halloween party and were still partying. They decided to drag, not dress up in their sister's clothes, but race. Dune had to add that there were exactly 9 of them in 2 cars.
One block from... Oh, sorry. I thought... I didn't realize I was supposed to still sing.
One block from the corner of Field Street and Old Mill Road, one of the cars with the teenagers in it collided head-on with the car carrying the young people. Their car rolled into a ditch and burst into flames. By the time firemen got there, it was too late to save them.
Terry could tell from the looks on the other guests' faces that most of them had guessed the truth by now. Angela and Trisha were both crying, tears running down their faces. Justine went on, her face cruel and old-looking in the flashlight beam.
I want you to shut your eyes now and imagine what Edmund and Sissy felt that night,
she said.
Imagine how it felt to be trapped in a burning car. The heat unbearable with no possible escape. And no one to help you, no matter how loudly you screamed. You may have guessed by now that Edmund and Sissy were my parents. But you may not have guessed the names of the teenagers in the other two cars. She recited
names slowly. Terry heard gasps as different guests recognized the names of their own parents.
None of the teenagers were hurt,
Justine said.
None of them ever paid for what they did to my parents. So I have decided that you, the children, will pay.
There wasn't a sound from the dining room except for the sniffling of Angela and Trisha.
Les had the honor of paying first, said Justine, because it was his father who drove the car that killed my parents. The rest of you will go together the way your parents should have all those years ago.
No! Angela screamed suddenly. How can you make us responsible for something that happened before we were born? It's not fair. That's why I don't pay reparations. I didn't own any slaves.
What happened to my parents wasn't fair either,
cried Justine. Let us go, Murphy pleaded. We won't tell anybody. Justine scrutinized him in a moment.
Then burst into laughter. Ha, 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 do you really think it's that easy?
She said. Terry looked at Nikki, feeling hopeless. He didn't know what Justine had in mind, but he was sure it was something horrible.
We've got to keep her talking, Nikki whispered.
What?
That's where I check to make sure it's been recording.
It has. As long as Justine is talking, she can't do anything to us, Nikki said, so we've got to stall her until the police come. If they come, Terry thought. David had been gone for quite a while still. Nikki's idea made some sense. Justine, he called. She turned to him annoyed.
What is it now?
She said. Jesus, cats.
I just wanted to know how you managed to fool all of us so completely. I mean, everything seems to be planned down to the last detail.
Justine was obviously pleased.
I'm glad you appreciate my efforts, she said. I've been planning this thing for a very long time. And I must admit, even I didn't expect how successful it would be.
So all of it, the invitations, the surprises, all were part of your plan?
Of course, said Justine. Everything was leading up to this moment, and now it's time.
Nikki interrupted her again.
But how could you do it all, she said. For instance, someone hit me and carried me downstairs. It couldn't have been you.
But of course it was,
Justine smiled, just exactly as if someone had complimented her in her hair.
But how did you get me down to the basement? Nikki went on. I know you're strong, but even you couldn't carry me that far.
I didn't have to,
Justine said smugly.
There's an old dumb waiter system in the house. I just put you into the second floor and then lowered you into the basement.
What about the cut banister? Said Terry.
Did you do that too? Justine laughed.
Ha ha ha! What do you think?
She said.
I realized before the party that someone might suspect me. So I arranged my little accident. It wasn't hard at all. When I was a teenager, I studied gymnastics.
Think about getting into gymnastics. Well, not as much gymnastics on, like, balance bars, but, like, going to the bar and having a balanced diet of both liquor and beer. These ones are awkward pauses I put in here.
She thought of everything, Terry thought. We don't have a chance. He tried to come up with something else to ask Christine to keep her talking, but his mind had gone blank.
What about Les? Said Nikki suddenly.
What about him?
Said Justine.
The others heard you talking to him before he came in here, Nikki said.
Justine laughed, a scornful laugh.
They heard me, but I'd be willing to bet they didn't hear Les's side of the conversation. But time is wasting,
Justine said, her smile fading.
If you will look up toward the ceiling, you will see I have put some state-of-the-art speakers for your entertainment.
Terry glanced up, surprised. As Justine had said, four huge speakers were attached high on the walls, just below the ceiling. The speakers are I'm sorry, I didn't sing that, listeners.
The speakers are connected to a battery-powered cassette deck I have out here,
Justine went on.
Which reminds me, it's time to begin your penalty.
But what about, said Terry.
No,
said Justine.
No more questions. It's time to get on with the rest of the surprise.
Again, she smiled, a smile so sweet that it was shocking in contrast with the terrible things she was saying.
When I started thinking about how to make you pay,
she said,
I realized that I wanted you to suffer the same way my parents had suffered long ago. But I couldn't arrange a car accident, and then I realized I could easily reproduce the worst parts of a car wreck.
Her song had started to go off the rails. She ducked below the window a moment, then stood up again.
I just switched on a tape that I made especially for you,
she said. I hope it's like the Lil B mixtape I have in my car, because I enjoy listening to that.
Hoes on my dick, west side bitch, suck my fucking dick, bitch, I'm rich like a trick. A low rumbling began to come from the huge speakers. Terry recognized the sound of a car engine starting up. Since I can't recreate a real accident,
Justine went on.
I'm going platinum. I'm gonna make you hear what it's like. Hear the shriek of twisted metal. The screams of pain from the terrified victims.
The sound of the engine grew louder, and now there were new sounds. Those of tires squealing around the curves as the taped car picked up speed. Is this what she's gonna do to us? Terry wondered in shock. Make us listen to a tape of car crashes? Is that all? Is it just audible red asphalt? I don't like weed. That's a weird transition. I don't like weed, and all my traffic safety schools I went to, I got really high when I was like 15. And I don't remember anything, and it was really funny, and I giggled. But, God, I hate marijuana. That being said, alcohol.
Yeah, it makes your mind work well. Of course, just hearing the sounds of an accident isn't enough,
Justine went on, as if she'd read his goddamn thoughts.
For you to really pay, you must also experience the pain they experience and die the way they die.
She flicked on a cigarette lighter.
I've piled a bunch of oily rags in the area just outside the dining room,
she said.
I'm going to go in and light them now. It'll take a few minutes for the flames to reach you.
You'll have plenty of time to think about my parents suffering and what's gonna happen to you.
She bent down again, then walked away from the window. Terry wanted to talk to the others to try to plan an escape, but the soundtrack on the tape quickly grew from loud to deafening. He couldn't hear anything as the car on the tape speeded up. A moment later, there was a sickening squeal of brakes, the crunch of twisted metal, shattering glass, and then the screams. Screams of pain and terror. Over and over, the sounds played so loud that Terry could feel their vibrations in his whole body. To the screams on the tape were added the screams of the guests trapped in the dining room. This seems a lot like Rocky Horror. Their hands clapped over their ears as they tried to shut out those dreadful, overwhelming noises. It was the most horrifying experience Terry had ever been through. He didn't think anything could be worse. And then, the first tendrils of smoke began to seep under the dining room door. Two things. Give me 1 second.
Fuck.
Two things. First off, tendrils is a word that R.L. Stein uses more than any other author ever. And second off, I hope you know that the chapter breaks where I pause and stuff are so necessary, because reading this much so quick, I feel like I'm about to pass out. I feel like I just did like 14 whippets and then now I'm finally getting oxygen. So give me half a second and I'll be back. Alright, Dune, you can get this up tonight. I know you can. Chapter 20. It was like a scene from a nightmare, Nikki thought as she watched her friends scream and writhe, trying to blot out the terrible sounds. Even Terry had his eyes squeezed shut, his hands pressed tightly to his ears. When the smoke began to filter into the room, the hysteria grew even greater. Alex and Murphy began beating on the window bars, clawing at them. Both boys had blood all over their hands, running down their arms, but they didn't seem to notice. Nikki could feel the vibrations on her clitoris. Not the time for that, Nikki. Dear God, you're about to die. I guess one more orgasm might be worth it. Did I say orgasm? I meant orgasm. I did not mean orgasm. I meant orgasm. Fuck. Let's just get this up tonight. Nikki could feel the vibrations from the tape through her body, but there was no terror in it for her. Rather, she felt almost as if she was standing back, watching something happen on a stage. She didn't know she was in mortal danger, that all of them were. The smoke coming in under the door was growing thicker. Nikki knew that they didn't have much time. She pressed her palm to the door. It was already hot. Somehow, they managed to find a way out. Sorry. That would be a nice ending, but it wasn't what it said. Somehow, they had to find a way out. Maybe if they all worked together, they could break down the door or bend back the grating. She touched Terry's shoulder. Terry, she said, we've got to do something. No fucking shit, obviously. He just stared at her, his eyes full of pain and confusion. He couldn't hear anything she was saying, and he obviously couldn't think straight. She tried Alex next, but like Terry, he couldn't hear her. He turned away and went back to pulling on the grating with Murphy. Has everyone lost their fucking minds? She said out loud. And realized that in a way, they all had. Trish and Angela were huddled together in a corner, sobbing, and Ricky was standing in front of the door, his eyes closed tightly, screaming. None of the friends would be able to hear her, Nikki realized. Maybe David would come soon with the police, but he'd been gone a long time. So many things could have happened to him that she knew she couldn't count on him now. It was up to her. Trying not to panic, and trying to ignore the growing clouds of smoke, she forced herself to think logically. The door was too heavy to break through. She went over the window and pushed in between Murphy and Alex. The grating was thick and immovable. She stepped back and forced herself to take 2 or 3 deep breaths of clear air coming in from the window. By now, the smoke in the room had become thick as fog, and her friends were completely lost in their hysteria. Justine had planned her revenge well.
If only there were another way out. If only there were a skylight or heating vent or... Her eyes fell on the handle set in the wall. A small spark of hope jumped within her. It might just be a cover, but maybe... Cupboard, not covert. Come on, mouth. I was recently listening to the Corolla podcast, and, God, I want to say, fuck, maybe I'm confused and mixing things up, but it was, someone was talking about doing mouth and voice stretches before recording or doing live shows, and I'm like, wait, reading a podcast is way longer than a live show, so I should have done that. A-E-U-A-O, Akasatana, Hamayarawa. I don't think it helped. It was part of the old dumbwaiter system that Justine had talked about. The dumbwaiter basket appeared to be much too small to hold a person, but Nikki was slender, and besides, Justine had said that was how she had gotten her into the basement. With a sinking feeling, Nikki realized she wouldn't be able to lower the basket herself. It was designed to be lowered manually by someone pulling on a rope attached to a pulley. She would have to find help. But could she break through to any of her friends? Terry was still with his hands pressed tightly over his ears. She shook him, roughly.
Ow, not long!
When he turned at her, she shouted as loud as she could, "Terry, you've got to help me!" She continued to stare at her blankly. He continued to stare at her blankly. "Terry!" she called again. "Please, it's up to us!" She searched his face, willing him to understand. Terry blinked, and suddenly his eyes cleared. He looked at her with understanding. "Funny face," he said. Beer. The tape was much too loud for him to hear. She pulled on his arm and led him over to the dumbwaiter. She pointed to herself, then to the basket, and pantomimed pulling on a rope. But now Alex had come over too, and both boys were staring at her as if she had lost her mind. I would like to point out that I read the word pantomimed perfectly. "You can't," Terry said. "It's too dangerous." Nikki read his lips easily, but shrugged off his warning. She pointed to the dining room door where the smoke was pouring into that bitch, all thick and dark and shit, like those weird monster cock porns that I knew someone that actually thought they are real and that somehow black guys walked around the world with 4-inch penises. God, how could he be so stupid? "She's right," Alex shouted. "It's our only chance." Reluctantly, Terry nodded his agreement. "Good," Nikki thought with relief. "But would it work?" Together, Alex and Terry boosted her up to the entrance of the dumbwaiter. She took a deep breath and crawled into the basket. It was a tight fit. But by keeping her knees tucked up under her chin, she was able to sit almost comfortably. "Ready!" she shouted, her heart pounding furiously. Alex began to operate the pulley. She could feel the ancient mechanisms creaking and groaning under a weight. Would it hold her? Suddenly, the dumbwaiter basket caught on something. Looking up, she could see Alex and Terry pulling on the ropes, trying to free it. It wouldn't budge. The air in the shaft was hot and smelled of smoke. The fire was spreading quickly. If the basket didn't begin moving soon, she would smother there, inside the walls of the old house. Knowing it was risky, she began to rock back and forth. Back, and forth, and forth. She knew that it would either free her or cause the basket to fall the rest of the way to the basement. With a sudden, sickening lurch, the basket dropped several inches. Nikki felt as if her heart had stopped. Then she relaxed as the basket resumed its steady progress downward. At the bottom, she pushed hard on the inside of the cupboard door and scrambled out. It would be funny if she was an Indian, like the Indian in the cupboard, because the book is called The Indian in a Cupboard, and that's a real book that exists. The air was much cleaner there, and for a moment she just breathed. Then she switched on her flashlight and shone it around the dark, musty room. The basement was shaped irregularly and contained what seemed to be dozens of nooks and cupboards. How can I not pronounce cupboards correctly?
Alcohol.
How had Terry ever found her down here? At last, the flashlight showed the basement stairs, and she quickly ran up them, only to find that the door was scorching hot. If she opened it, she'd be incinerated. There had to be another way out. There had to be. Again, she shone the flashlight around. Something dark and furry skittered off to the side, and Nikki jumped. At last, she saw the outlines of a window and rushed over to it. Her heart sank in dismay. It was boarded up. Nikki wanted to cry. Dune wanted to cry. Everything that had happened. To be trapped here. To die here. Stop it, she told herself. Don't give up now. By the way, Franklin, I wasn't telling you to stop it. You can keep doing what you're doing. I love you, bruh. Her friends were all depending on her. Terry was depending on her. Somehow, goddammit, she had to find a way out. She propped the flashlight so it showed on the boards over the window and began pulling at them, her fingernails all breaking. Finally, one of the boards began to work loose, and she could see the dark shape of an overgrown bush outside. Wait, no, it was just the flashlight reflecting on her pubes. Hey-o! She pulled harder and harder. At last, the board came free. The space wasn't quite big enough for her to escape through, but if she could get one or two more boards loose, she might be able to wiggle out or go for help. She began pulling on the next board, trying to think about how long it was taking, trying not to think about that shit. She had nearly pulled it free when she felt a hand squeeze her ankle.
Chapter number 21.
Nikki screamed and jumped away from the window. As she did, she tripped over something soft and went sprawling on the floor. It's Justine, she thought. Justine had found out and will kill me right here, right now. This is why I checked to see if it's recording. But she won't do it without a fight. Nikki twisted and tried to pull away from the hand that held her, but then in the dim light of the flashlight, she saw that it wasn't Justine at all. It was Justine's uncle, Philip. The hand that gripped her ankle was securely tied with a rope to the other hand, and its ankles were tightly bound together. Maybe I am dyslexic. I know I've recorded a lot of these, but I got stain, S-T-A-I-N, as satin, S-A-T-I, oh, fucking whatever. A large stain of dried blood showed on his white and blue polka dot shirt. Nikki was so surprised that at first she didn't realize Philip was speaking to her. She squinted in the dim light and peered closely to see what the fuck he was saying. "Help me," he said. His sad clown face reminded her of Slug from Atmosphere and his sad clown bad dub series that I think they're up to like 19 now. Distorted in urgency of his words, "Please, please, you've got to help." "I will," said Nikki. Philip stopped talking in surprise. "But you've got to help me too," she added. "Me and my friends." She began to untie Philip's hands and feet, explaining as she did what Justine had done. When she told him about the fire, Philip's eyes widened in horror. "I thought I smelled smoke," he said. "I never dreamed that she..." Nikki finished untying him. "Come on," she said. "We've got to hurry." Philip scrambled to his feet and ran to a chest, returning with a thick crowbar. For such a frail-looking man, he was surprisingly strong. What the asshole lifted a crowbar? That's not anything significant. Whatever, RL, I'll keep reading. He plied the remaining boards off the window in only a few seconds that he lifted Nikki onto the windowsill and scrambled after her. Once outside, Nikki greedily gulped in the fresh air. Ooh, that felt good. But there was no time to waste. Nikki and Philip ran around to the front of the house. Inside the windows, they could see the glow of the fire. The other teens were all pressed against the window grate, struggling to breathe. Philip pried at the grating with his crowbar. No. No, it wouldn't budge, thought Nikki, the panic rising to her throat. No. No. Keep trying. Yes. At last, Philip pulled off the grating. Choking and gasping, the kids began to climb out, their eyes red and streaming from the thick, acidic smoke. I said acidic, but I said acritic. Is that a word? Tweet me at that. At Dune. Is that a word?
Alex and Terry had helped the others out and were the last to emerge. An instant after they left, the door to the dining room burst into flames. Nikki and Philip led the choking, shocked kids out to safety in the front yard, far from the house that was now in flames from the basement to the attic. Once they had reached safety, Terry found Nikki and hugged her tight, kissing her face and hair. "Funny face," he said over and over. "Funny face." Nikki scarcely was able to believe he was all right. His face was streaked with soot and his eyebrows were slightly singed. Oh, he probably looked like a tranny. It had been close. Very close. Nikki and Terry just stood there with their arms around each other, watching the burning house send up bright orange sparks into the sky. To the east, faint streaks of light began to appear. Part of the roof suddenly caved in, sending a huge shower of sparks all over them, like some sort of gay 80s metal band video. Franklin, Scarlet, Yoda, pets. Everyone moved back to the edge of the yard. An instant later, David stumbled out of the Fear Street woods. This is one of those chugging breaks. So I guess Marty and Bobby were too drunk to know what they were doing, David explained. When I finally woke up, I was in a strange shed at the corner of the cemetery. I went over to the nearest house and called the police. David had a huge bruise on his forehead and patches of dried blood on his cheeks, but he seemed to be all right. In fact, everyone was. Everyone but Les, that dead-ass gaylord, am I right? Because that fucker's dead? Gaylord. Trisha and Ricky were both sitting and watching the fire, almost as if nothing had happened to them. Murphy and Angela were sitting in the tall grass, ignoring how wet it was, comforting each other. Alex was standing off by himself, a sad look on his face, the beautiful silver costume ripped and streaked with soot. Terry couldn't believe this shit. How could so much happen in such a short time?
I like how it's a short time, but for me to read this book, it was like 9 months.
He had a feeling that everything that had happened in the house that night had changed them all. Forever. The faint wail of a siren began to sound in the distance. Philip stood in front of the group of them, and Terry was surprised to see that there were tears in their eyes.
I'm so terribly, terribly sorry, he told them. I never meant like for anything to happen and shit like this. You must believe me.
What do you mean? Said Alex angrily. We were almost killed in there.
All I wanted, said Philip, was to frighten you, nothing more.
Terry thought he was beginning to understand, and the knowledge enraged him. Are you saying that this was your idea all along? He demanded.
Yes! Yes! Philip said in a shamed voice. You see, Justine's father was my older brother. He was the closest person to me in the world, and he died. I vowed to raise Justine so he'd be proud of her, but I could never get over his death, I guess, with the years. I must have communicated my bitterness to Justine. I see now I should have taught her forgiveness and love.
See, anyone out there with kids, that's what you should teach them. You know? Like the ridiculous tattoo I have on my arm says with Bill and Ted.
Just be excellent to each other. Instead, I taught her hatred and the desire for revenge.
Then you planned this all these years, said Trisha, sounding horrified.
No, not at all, said Philip. He stopped and wiped his hand over his face. Last year I became ill, and I decided to spend my last days in my brother's own home. I told everyone I was a distant cousin, so they would leave me the fuck alone. But when Justine found out I was here, she left her boyfriend in Korea and moved in with me. She convinced me that I could never die in peace until I avenged my brother's death.
Terry stared at Philip in horror. Everything he was saying sounded like someone's nightmare. Yet, it was all true.
You know the rest, Philip went on. Justine enrolled in high school while I researched the original party and traced the sons and daughters of the teenagers of all the accident. Then we sent the invitations. How could you do it? Alex asked. How? None of this ever did anything to you.
Oh no, I'm out of Bud Light Platinum.
I know it, said Philip, and perhaps I was a little crazy to have carried a grudge for so long, but you must believe me, I never intended any real harm to come to you. I only wanted you to know terror, to know suffering, for a while.
But Justine took your plan one step too far, didn't she? Said Nikki. In contrast to Alex, Nikki's face and voice showed nothing but sympathy.
I didn't realize how obsessed she'd become, Philip said, nodding in agreement, until I found the body of your friend Les. I knew Justine had done it, and I knew I must stop or I hid his body on the roof so no one would find it. And then I confronted my niece with what she had done. I told her
animals.
I told her we must stop the party at once. I told her I was going to call the police, but she... He stopped speaking and began to sob. She attacked you.
Oh, wait, no, it's Nikki now.
She attacked you, said Nikki. I know. She did it to me, too. I never expected her to act against me, said Philip. She stunned me with a blow to the head, and then she must have dragged me down to the basement and tied me up.
Are you trying to tell us that Justine did all of this herself? Killed Les? Knocked you out?
Alex was plainly disbelieving. You must understand, said Philip, that Justine is very strong. I think she worked on building up her strength so she could be capable of anything. I believe she always knew she would do something like this. How dare you!
Everyone turned around to the sound of Justine's voice. She was standing at the edge of the garden, her lovely face almost unrecognizable beneath the madness and rage.
Justine! Philip cried. In spite of everything he told them, Terry could see how much he still loved his niece.
You have betrayed me.
Let's make her still sing, Justine shouted at him. Even worse, you've betrayed my parents and I could have killed you. I should have killed you when I had the chance. No, cried Philip, sinking to his knees. Don't say that. I should have known you were too weak to do what had to be done, she said,
or better yet, sang.
No one was ever as strong as I was. I planned the perfect revenge, and it would have succeeded, and nearly did. She glared at all of them with pure hatred. Terry looked away. Nikki gripped his hand more tightly. We're safe now, he told himself. She can't hurt us anymore. But he jumped in fright, as everyone else did, when Justine suddenly ran directly at them, her green eyes blank with madness. Just before she reached them, she suddenly veered to the left and then moved faster than seemingly possible, ran up the front steps and onto the burning porch.
It's the final chapter 22.
No! A single English wail from Philip split the air. Terry froze when Justine had swerved and headed back to the burning house. But as soon as she reached the steps, he began running too, almost without realizing he was doing it. Running after her, running toward the heat and the flames. From the corner of his eye, he sensed motion. And just as he reached the steps, he saw that Alex, too, was running after Justine just behind him. Without slowing down, Terry ran up the steps and on to the blazing porch. Justine was standing just at the entrance to the house, swaying slightly, her clothes beginning to burn. She turned around, and when she saw Alex and Terry, her eyes widened and she started into the house, which had become an inferno of flame.
Grab her! Alex shouted. Terry reached out and grabbed for Justine. He got her arm and pulled with all his strength. But with the strength of the insane, she lunged into the opposite direction, pulling him into the house after her. Both of them tumbled onto the burning floor. Terry screamed as he saw the flames spreading to within inches of where he lay. The next thing he knew, someone had grabbed him, and he was rolling out of the house, down the steps and into the mud. Someone rolled him over and over, the cool mud soothing the heat. He dazed up to see Alex standing over Justine, beating out her flaming clothes with his silver jacket. Justine was sobbing now, not in insanity, but in defeat, in pain. Alex came over and bent over Terry's pale face, frightening and drawn. His pale face like Edward, unlike those people that hate the pale faces of Jacob. God, this is all about Twilight, isn't it? Hey, man, he said, you all right? Terry nodded. You saved my life, Alex. Thanks. You tried to save all of our lives, Alex said, putting a hand on Terry's shoulder. I guess we were just too stubborn to listen. For a moment, the two boys just stared at each other, and Terry saw something he never expected to see again. The look of friendship and respect. He hoped that his face showed the same thing. A moment later, the yard filled with the flashing lights and wailing sirens of emergency vehicles. While the firemen began to battle the blaze, medical personnel examined Terry and Alex for burns. Nikki stood close beside Terry, holding onto his arm as if she would never let go. What do you think will happen to Justine? She said. She will get the help she needs, said Philip sadly. I should have seen that she had it long ago. They watched as Justine was strapped into a hospital gurney. A few minutes later, the police ambulance pulled out of the yard, its siren wailing. Overhead, a shower of sparks erupted, illuminating the ruined skeleton of the Cameron Mansion. Behind the black smoke, the red morning sun made its first appearance. Hey, we made it all night. It's morning, Ricky cried. It's Halloween. Fuck!
Oh my god, get it together, dude.
Hey, we made it all night. It's morning, Ricky cried. It isn't Halloween anymore. I don't know about that, said Nikki, holding on to Terry's arm as they began to walk away. It's always Halloween on Fear Street.
The end. Fuck.
God damn. Woo!
Anyway, I'm going back to normal Goosebumps. Lucas is picking the next one. I'm getting this up finally. No more Fear Street. It's three long parts. It's exhausting. That's like a full audiobook. I'm fairly confident the people that are paid to read audiobooks don't get $55, which I thoroughly appreciate. No one has to give me anything, but fuck. That was exhausting. That was so goddamn much time. So I'm going to edit this and then put it together and hopefully go the fuck to sleep. If not, be awake, play some either Grand Theft Auto or Borderlands, or the girlfriend will get home, bring me some food because I'm hungry. You know what? I feel like I shouldn't even get into the ending. This is very exhausting. I'm never doing a Fear Street again. Unless you really want me to. How close in size are the Animorphs to Goosebumps? Because that seems like the common consensus of what I need to do after I finish these. That being said, I'm Dune. This is Dune Reads Goosebumps. Yodi, don't scratch the couch. But you know what you should do, Yodi? Stay spooky, bitches. Should I run another hat? Drive a
Standing up at noon, rack game, Warren Moon. Fly like Ernest Gibbons, stay up out my business. Talking now live, get your ass dismissed quick. Light on a safe, born to stack paper. 34 at halftime, rack game, Christian Leitner. Shoot about a yacht, show the sniff of shit. Pop another pill while I take it for a trip. Watch me like this. Watch me in my circle. Watch me caress your TV screen. Nike commercials.